paying Danville Overhead Doors for its support of Focus 580. Overhead Doors is pleased to support public radio in Central Illinois on behalf of its customers and business associates. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Owens Funeral Home at the corner of Elm and University in Champaign, locally owned and operated and serving families since 1925. Owens Funeral Home invites you to join them in supporting public radio.
Good morning, this is Focus 580, our morning telephone talk show. My name is Jack Brighton, sitting in for David Inge, your regular host. Glad you could listen today. During this hour of the program, we'll take your questions on home energy, something we like to do every once in a while on the show. Our guest, Larry Lister, he is an engineer with Facility Dynamics Engineering. He's been dealing for a lot of years with various energy systems, heating, ventilation, air conditioning, in small and large buildings, and he's here to take your questions. We'll talk about maybe what's new talk about some of the seasonal topics that we might cover during this hour. But the point of this is to answer your questions, and all you need to do is call us. The number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. If you match the letters with the numbers, that's what you get. We also have a toll-free line anywhere in the Midwest, or if you're listening online, anywhere in the continental U.S., the toll-free line, 800-222-9455. Again, your questions are welcome, 333-WILL or 800-222-WILL. Larry Lister, thanks for being here again.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. And it's summer, but it's not acting like it outside.
No, typical visit for me. I come over in the summer in a sweatshirt, and I come over in the winter in shorts. I don't know what's the deal.
It must be something about you.
Somebody needs to talk to Ed Kieser about this.
Oh, yes. He would love to take that, yeah. That kind of
everybody
question.
Everybody blames the weatherman.
So is there any particular new topic that we should cover? Anything on your mind that you're seeing or thinking about?
Oh, boy. What's on my mind?
Besides the weekend.
Well, the weekend. Yes, there is a weekend coming up. You know, I got these neighbors.
Do tell.
Yeah. You know, I ride my little bike around town and walk around and drive around. And everybody's got their air conditioner on, which is great because air conditioners are good and they keep us cool and we love them when we need them. The question is when we need them. I see a lot of houses on about April 1st, the air conditioner comes on, and it's on until October, sometimes November. And, you know, there's reasons for that. And there's a few good reasons for that for some folks who need to really protect their interior environment. There's, you know, a lot of folks that have, you know, really bad allergy issues and things like that. And so, you know, that's an option. But by and large, the fact that we've got these heating and cooling systems connected up to our houses allows us to treat our residential spaces like we're treating our commercial spaces, which, you know, we can go into that issue too. Mm. We hermetically seal everything, and then we just throw horsepower at the problem or kilowatts at the problem. Well, you know, I'm a little bit warm. I'm a little bit cool. I'm gonna toss the, you know, I'll let this the control system take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I leave the house at 9:30 this morning. It's 62 degrees maybe. I walked out of the house to come do the show, and there's two air conditioning units next door fired away.
And it's 52 degrees outside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's up with that? Anyway, so
I don't know. You tell me.
Anyway, and it was interesting because, you know, when I talk to people and I say, you know, politely, what's up with that? They say, well, I don't want all that nasty outside air in my house.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, you know, if we lived next to the expressway in downtown Chicago, okay, I'll buy the nasty air argument. I was just in LA yesterday, came back, you know, downtown, it's not pleasant. But we're in Champaign-Urbana. You know, okay, you got issues over on the other side of Champaign, you know, you got some aromatically challenged parts of town, perhaps. You know, there's the South Farms occasionally on a windy day. But why do we do this? You know, I mean, We have windows. We can open them. The environment will often move air through our house pretty nicely for us. If there's just a little bit of wind, create some pressure differences across the house. Real nice, you know, nice breezes coming in. I just don't get it. You know, okay, maybe it makes things a little dusty, but I probably, and I like comfort. You know, I'm not as hardcore as most people might want to assume. But I want to feel the outdoors. I want some sense of the outdoors. I want to be able to, if I'm cooped up inside working, I want to at least sense the outdoors.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that brings up an interesting question, because now that air conditioning has become sort of ubiquitous, we're so used to it that we have become conditioned to air conditioning. It's become, you know, people conditioning as well. I mean, so that if it's not present, if we're just slightly, maybe a little bit high humidity level, you know, then, you know, maybe a lot of us don't feel comfortable with that. Mm-hmm. And so we have to hit that button and crank up the air.
Yeah, that is true. And there was a lot of interesting research on that going on back in the mid-90s or so about the fact that we're conditioned to air, mm-hmm, is a great, mm-hmm, way to put it. And we have less and less tolerance for different environmental conditions. There's other things that are very real too, that are what's comfortable to us changes seasonally. And that's actually just, mm-hmm, been recently reflected in some of the newer regulations that we mechanical engineers have to deal with doing commercial buildings, is that they've actually widened our ability to vary comfort in spaces by the standards that they're used. And one of those is that in the summer, they're finally recognizing, the people that write these standards and things, they're finally recognizing that in the summer, people can stand to be a little bit warmer in general than they can in the winter.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And so it's a slight variation, but a couple degrees is a major thing. Our bodies are incredibly precise temperature measuring devices under the same conditions. Mm-hmm. You come in for a run, you're not going to have the same kind of sensitivity to heat and cool that you're going to have if you're just. But in a normal state, a few degrees makes a big difference, and they're allowing for a little bit of variation in that. But getting back to this thing with our houses, you know, if you're approaching it from a money perspective, there is absolutely no argument. You open your windows, you can save money, and if you're sensitive to that, and you know, the rates aren't going down, if you're sensitive to that, you know, take a look at that window, you know, because a lot of folks, I think, have forgotten. They just take this thing as a constant in their lives, this utility bill, and open your window if you can. I mean, some of us can't. Some of us are sealed in because of, you know, storm windows and old houses or whatever. But to the extent you can, you know, open the house up. If you can't tolerate it for some reason, you know, body problem, you know, health problems, allergies, anything like that. Go, you know, do what you need,
sure,
to do. But don't default to this, I haven't opened my windows in 5 years kind of thing. And I hear it a lot. And it's just, I don't.
Yeah. Well, we have a caller to talk with. Why don't we include them?
I've probably really hacked them off.
We'll find out, won't we?
I always hack somebody off when I come on this.
We're talking with Larry Lister. He's a mechanical engineer with Facility Dynamics Engineering. He deals with energy systems and buildings, and we're taking your questions on home energy, 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Let's talk with a caller in Indiana, line number 4. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Yeah, hi. What I'm after is possibly some aid in whether I'm using my air conditioner properly. I'm in a single-story older house. Don't have central air. Just have air conditioner stuck in the living room window, and I discovered eventually that if I put some fans in appropriate places on low, that it helps cool down the other parts of the house that would never get the air. And it's a fairly new air conditioner. I think it's maybe 2 years old. Instructions say to turn it on the temperature on full. I think that's like number 5 on this, and on high cool until you get to the place where you want the temperature to be, then turn back the temperature control you know, to find a comfortable setting and all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm asking, I'm now retired and living on, you know, single monies a month sort of thing. So I'm trying to find all kinds of places I can save pennies and nickels and dollars and stuff like that. And I was wondering the importance of setting it on the top cooling degree number for a period of time versus instead of having it on 5, start it up, you know, maybe at 4 or something. Now, am I causing myself more expense doing it that way? Then and along those lines, is there any other kind of help you could give on use of, you know, a window air conditioner to be the most efficient you can be with it and spend the less money? And I open the windows. I'm not one of those people, you know, that sealed up the house for, you know, in fact, I like the wind and stuff as best I can coming through. But when the humidity gets up, then I find that my age now getting sort of more intolerable. So I more or less use the air conditioner to just keep on the edge of the moisture inside the house versus the moisture outside. I don't keep it, you know, I found out I can keep it real unmoist at 68 degrees and freeze to death.
Right.
Seems to be a place, so once you get above what my thermostat says, like 72, things change drastically in terms of humidity. And I'm sort of been running a little tight rope here action to see if I can keep it right, like at 70, 71. And I'm just wondering if from a mechanical engineering standpoint that makes any sense at all, or whether I'm just, you know, sort of satisfying my emotions and physically, you know, I'm doing the wrong thing, or maybe I'm doing the right thing.
Well, first of all, physically do what you need to do. That's, you know, I sure don't mean to sound, hopefully I'm not sounding like I'm badgering folks to not ever use their air conditioner.
No.
Because I use it.
No.
You know, and humidity is the issue, at least
yeah,
for me.
It is
and
to me.
For most folks, I think it is.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to sit around working at my desk at home and have paper sticking to my elbows
yeah.
and stuff.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
So that's when I go for the switch.
Mm-hmm.
And, so I think it sounds like you're doing everything right from what you mm-hmm. said. You're number one, you're opening the windows when the outside can do it for free. When you're using the window, you've got a newer window unit, which is a really important issue, and we can go into that in a little bit later. The newer window units are really nicely efficient.
Mm-hmm.
They're just way better than they used to be. To the fact that I've recommended window units over central air systems for some people in some types of houses and some applications. There's a bunch of issues there. Maybe I'll get to talk about those a little bit later. You're also using some small fans to circulate around the house.
I pull them out of the living room and, you know, direct them down a hallway or something.
Yeah.
It seemed to have helped somewhat, you know.
Right.
A lot better than it was before I used it.
Yeah. Now on this situation with running it full bore for a while until it gets to where it's going to get, and the, you know, that recommendation, that's a good one, and it really is not costing you any more in the long run. You have
okay.
a session where you're going to run this thing for however you run it. If you're going to run this thing for 8 hours, or 10 hours, or 4 days, whatever it's going to be, you know, during a big humid spell. You're going to use the same amount of electricity, give or take some negligible amount, regardless of how you do that startup procedure. And the reason they have you do that is that an air conditioner is kind of a little funky compared to our intuitive nature things. With an air conditioner, you want to run it as full as you can to get that is the most efficient. That's where it has its efficiency. And an air conditioning system needs to run steadily and for a fairly long period of time before you get those efficiencies. And that's why I generally harp quite a bit when I come on the show about people that oversize their air conditioners. The first sin of poorly purchasing an air conditioner is everybody wants it to be like their car. They want to get blasted.
Yeah.
Well, what I see fairly commonly is a 4-ton air conditioner being put in a 2-ton house.
Yeah.
And the thing's just bumping on and off and on and off and on and off. And if it even does the cooling job, trying to run like that, it is doing it very inefficiently. An air conditioner needs to run about 20 to 30 minutes before it reaches its peak efficiency. And you also need to run for a long period of time to do that dehumidification job.
Yeah.
And if you're coming on and off and on and off, you're not going to pull the water out of the air that that you want.
Well, I guess I am doing okay in terms of that.
You're doing great.
Paid some attention to it, and it has a long cycle. Well, the last bad spell we had it a week or so ago, with the humidity at least, temperatures didn't get, you know, in the 90s like we had last summer. But it didn't certainly go on and off like that. In fact, it went for, you know, I would say maybe more than a half an hour, you know, as I was paying attention to it. So I guess I got that worked out okay.
Yeah. Now, I think everything you said was right on.
Okay, good. Now, secondly, another question. The furnace is a gravity furnace, and I know when you when people come on in the winter and stuff on the station here, particularly talk about turning your temperature down to, you know, I've heard them say as low as 62 or 65, and to then turn it up when you get up in the morning to their 70 or 72 or whatever you are using, and when I've made inquiries of people about that, they're always talking about central heating. And I know that the newer furnaces are, you know, very efficient compared to a gravity mm-hmm. thing. And I was just one, I tried it last year, this last winter I did that. And I pretty well froze my buns off for a few hours in the morning when I got up. But, you know, I just sort of wonder if this is the best play on you know, a very inefficient furnace is what I have.
Yeah.
And there's no particular, where I live now, if they put in a new efficient furnace, all the code stuff has to be redone. So it's, you know, out of my pocketbook range completely. So I just want to know, turning it down, the gravity furnace at night has the same advantage as you do when you do central heating that way.
But the problem is that you're, as you noted, is that you can't recover in the morning very quickly.
No, that's for sure.
Because, you know, the reason that that a forced air furnace allows you to recover fast is that we throw horsepower at it.
Yeah.
We got a fan.
Yeah.
So we say, you know, do it now, and it does it now. You've got an almost uncontrolled bonfire in your house is really what a gravity furnace is. Jack looks scared over there.
Interesting way to
put
it.
Oh, no. That's about what it is. And
yeah, really.
You know,
it's in a big metal container, you
it's
know.
A big old steel box, and if you, yeah, yeah. Let your comfort be your guide, because you're not gonna squeeze any kind of efficiency out of that thing anyway.
Yeah, okay.
You're throwing a lot of money up the stack. I'm kind of curious about the code thing you mentioned. I'm not sure what you've been told or why on that.
Well, I guess the way it went was I wasn't involved in it. I was just told by the landlady that.
Oh, there we go. Enough said.
You know, she doesn't. She's in the bind. They've raised, you know, I guess they have done it in Illinois too. Property taxes sort of shot up all of a sudden due to court decision here in Indiana, and people are paying like mm-hmm. sometimes 3 to 5 times more taxes on the properties, the rental properties in particular, and it's put a squeeze on her. And you know, was talking to me about it, one time talking about putting in a new efficient furnace, and then she got some prices and things, and then she was told by whoever she talked to that the wiring was not set up for it, and we'd have to change all that, and that changed the price quite a bit. And so I told her, you know, it's not a big deal with me. I'm keeping warm. I just wanted to, you know, just want to know how to do it the most efficient way so I can keep my gas bill down somewhat. That's all.
Yeah, you are paying the gas bill, correct?
Yeah.
Boy, that's the age-old problem. And over here in Champaign, you know, we're such a rental heavy environment here, and I hear this constantly from people mm-hmm. is they want to do the right thing, but the landlord doesn't, and her property would be worth a lot more if she was to put an efficient unit in.
Mm-hmm.
I would really question this wiring thing. These things, you know, a homeowner, even if it's a rental property, has a lot more leeway than a commercial building owner as far as code and stuff. I can't hardly see any reason why you would have to redo the electrical to put in a furnace. I mean, I say that and then I keep saying, well, yeah, you could have some really old, you know, four-circuit fuse box with knob and tube wiring or something. I don't know, but...
Yeah. We've got the old fuses and we've got the circuit breakers.
Okay.
I mean, sort of half the house is on the regular fuse and the other half's on circuit breakers.
Yeah, so there's a way to do this and without having to deal with that.
Okay.
But it's not a cheap endeavor. It's not a cheap thing to do, but boy, that's, you know, you've got the worst of all the heating worlds
I mean, I come across friends who live in newer homes and things, and their budget for gas is, they'll say like $32, and I'm doing 120. And when it really gets bad out and stuff, and wind starts blowing, but I've more or less accepted that, and I'll pass the word on to the lady and tell her that, you know, maybe in the future she'd find another company that might want to do that, use the wiring that we have.
You mentioned that her property value would easily reflect the cost of putting in that new
furnace. Well, thanks a lot.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. A couple callers waiting. We'll go next to a listener in Homer on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hi.
Yeah. Hey.
Well, I guess the first thought I had was listening to Hank Spees a few days ago, said nail the windows, effectively said leave the windows shut and keep the AC on all summer. But
he did.
Yeah. Because of the humidity problems.
Okay.
At least that's what I took away from it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't do that. I have an older home where I have two window units, one upstairs in my bedroom and one on the main floor, and an old oil burner. So that my long-term outlook is to replace both of those.
Sure.
And I know thinking what is the thought on considering geothermal and for heating and cooling?
Mm-hmm.
Because the chimney, when I replace the old oil burner, it's been unlined, so I want to at least go to a high efficiency gas to avoid having to line the
chimney. Yeah.
The chimney. And I want a decent air conditioning system. And the little issues like continuing to seal up some old windows. Fortunately, it has nice aluminum storm windows on almost all of them, and the ones that don't will soon have them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's relatively a tight house for a 100-year-old house.
Yeah.
Okay. But the cost versus, I'm probably going to be there 5 years at least, but I don't know that.
Yeah. Well, boy, there's a whole bunch of things we could jump on there. Let's see. My first take is you mentioned geothermal, so
as an option to lower the cost,
right? You would be looking at let's just talk about very quickly the geothermal versus traditional system approach. Geothermal being a single unit that runs in two different directions and it can heat or cool. You use the relatively consistent temperatures of the ground or possibly a water source as a place to reject and get your heat for that unit. And they're very efficient. They're very expensive. I heard Hank talk about these the other day. Oops. I did hear Hank talk about the sealing the windows, and I'm not sure that didn't play into my earlier discussion, but anyway,
I don't think I agreed completely with that either.
Well, I didn't either, but he was pretty right on about the geothermal as he approached it, and so I'm not gonna refute anything he said. I think the prices could be relooked at because I think he had some low prices on both sides, and I think the ratio of the prices for conventional versus heat pump were he was pretty much right about that. You're going to pay possibly three times as much for these heat pump systems. I've heard heat pump numbers, these are installed numbers and that people have paid for, in the $12,000 to $18,000 range.
In about a 2,000 square foot Yeah,
I mean, it's almost the size of the house is
it doesn't matter.
It's, yeah, if a single unit, it's almost inconsequential whether you're 2 tons or 4 tons.
Right.
And the price difference of the unit itself doesn't change that much. Yeah. It's the labor and it's all the stuff. And if you're putting in 2 units, then you're gonna it's a whole different deal. But yeah, for 2,000 square foot house, so you've got that issue to deal with. Are you in town? In A-town?
Yeah.
That often comes into play because a lot of times you can't get Juliet in to find a place to get to put in the slinky or the wells or whatever.
Right.
The underground burial, I meant. So.
Well, and your thoughts. I mean, I was thinking of certainly getting a quote before going anyways, but at that higher price range, I don't know whether I'll be here. And, if I knew I was going to be in that house for 20 years, that would be a different story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my general take, and if one wants to be efficient, regardless,
mm-hmm.
look into to the heat pumps and the ground source heat pumps and all that stuff. That is the most energy efficient thing to do. However, the costs are really pretty prohibitive. You got to really want to be efficient to go that route. Unless you're out in the country or or you've got these longer time horizons, there's all kinds of other factors. In town, most people opt for the conventional approach, and you can go. There's a wide range of efficiencies and things you can do going that approach. The efficient furnaces are great. Condensing furnaces, they're quiet. They've really improved them a lot. There were problems in the 80s, but they've been great for a long time. You run a plastic pipe out the side of the house. You don't need the chimney anymore.
Right.
You don't have to do the maintenance on the chimney. You can get rid of it if you want. So there's nothing that I can tell but benefits for going to the 92% plus condensing furnaces.
And then on central air, something that's 10 steer or better?
Yeah, right now the SEER rates are, I think the minimum is still 10 for the central units. It's going up to 12 or 13 in the year 2006, depending on the election.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I'm going to say about that. Because these standards may just go away.
Right.
And I'm already seeing EPA documents to the effect that they're rescinding and holding up standards for one reason or another because of some reasons that I'm not sure are real. But the Energy Star program, which still exists, I think, will require a SEER 13 on the condensing unit, and that's pretty good. It's very easy to get at least a SEER 11. Those are almost pretty common. The good news and the change to the old story is that window units have really become efficient.
Right.
I actually just bought one for my little office so I could just cool my office instead of the whole house. And there are SEER 11s all over the place,
mm-hmm.
and they're cheap. Used to be if you could get a SEER 7 window unit, you were lucky. To me, that really changes the landscape. If you're like me and like the caller that called earlier, if you're only using this thing for 2-3 weeks out of the entire heating season or cooling season, I start to wonder whether the central air really makes sense. And the wild card in that is that a lot of our ductwork in our houses, new and old, stinks, and
mm-hmm.
you're losing all kinds of. You're paying for all this central cooling, and you're losing a lot of it. And unless you're making it efficiently outside, it makes you feel good. You got this nice, efficient air handler furnace, but everything in between can be like a straw or a sieve. And I see a lot of people putting these things in, and I kind of say, I'm really wondering what the efficiency's going up on these window units, and they're quiet. They're controllable. They've got little remote thermostats that are wireless. You can put the thermostat in the other side of a big room, and it'll control the thing. It's really kind of getting cool out there, and no pun intended.
Right. Well, I guess
so that's an option.
That's an option, and it leads into the that's the next question, is that the upstairs, from when I'm using windows and such, just the nature of there being a lot of roof area, mm-hmm. is, you know, how could I, you know, I would be thinking, I lived in a house once with a split hot water system, and that was nice because you could keep the upstairs warm, but on air conditioning. Is there an easy way to do that? But I suppose even if I go with central air conditioning, if I need a little kick, hang on to a, or put in a window unit.
Mm-hmm. That's one way of attacking that problem. You know, the cold air, when you're dumping cold air into the house, think of it like water.
Yeah,
you know, you're dumping it in upstairs, and it's running down the stairs down to the bottom. And you're, you know, the first floor is a bathtub, and whether it's a good bathtub or a bad bathtub depends on, you know, how well sealed you are. But generally, cold air just does that. It's very gravity oriented, and you know, we can't see it. But when in doubt, just imagine water coming out of those units, and where would you go if you were water dumping it? So it's going to go downstairs, mm-hmm. and the hot air is going to go upstairs, and that's a very real thing that you have to deal with. So, yeah, there's ways to do it. And a central unit is rarely going to do the upstairs as well as you would like it to, especially if you're attaching to an older house.
Right.
That the ductwork wasn't designed to handle the higher CFMs of the that you're going to be pushing when you're cooling. So,
okay.
Yeah, that's
Right now, everything manages, but the day the furnace dies, I'm mm-hmm. going to replace it.
Yeah.
Or I finally get tired of pulling the AC units out of the windows, which is the thing I don't like about them. And, you know, architecturally, having them stick out the windows, it isn't pretty.
No.
So, although the option, the thought of how do I cool that back room that gets hot with that one, well, maybe I'll keep one around there, but, you know.
Yeah, I think the bottom
I'm sure, you know, when you look at a house, that even though it might be more useful, more efficient, there is something nice about central, so you don't have to pull them out every winter. And
sure, yeah, and I don't want to be disrespecting central air because
it's
a great thing, but I'm just, you know, it used to be that it was just a no-brainer decision. If you could do central, do it. Don't use these window units because they were inefficient, loud, nasty, and there just wasn't much of a redeeming factor other than they did do the cooling job when you needed them to. Or if you have a hot water system, you're a little bit stuck. Although there's options there. Nowadays, they're making them really nice, and it changed. I think it changes the landscape for some folks depending on your usage and your profile.
Well, I don't want to take up any more time, but I did have the original reason I was going to listen to this program and call this morning that I thought of when I heard about it yesterday was using a dehumidifier. I run one in my basement, keep the basement dry, but using one on the main level. There's a bathroom down there that gets some use, plus the kitchen, to lessen the humidity load on the AC. And the AC unit down there does run pretty long, and it does control the humidity. But what's the thoughts on that? I think I'll hang up and listen.
Okay, Dig. Don't run a dehumidifier when you're running a central air conditioner. A dehumidifier is a window unit that's running in your house. So instead of cooling the air in your house and dumping the heat that it picks up from the electricity and from the house outside, which is what a window unit does, a dehumidifier does not cool a space. It, in fact, heats a space. So you're using a dehumidifier is an air conditioner and not a very efficient one. So you're using an inefficient air conditioner on your first floor to dehumidify this area so that your regular air conditioner doesn't have to do it. Your regular air conditioner is built better for the job is built well for that job, and it's going to do it a lot more efficiently. So don't run a dehumidifier in any space that you're comfort cooling using any other source.
Because you're basically heating the space,
yeah.
And then you have to cool it again with the air conditioner.
Yeah, and you're taking moisture out, but you're not really assisting your central air conditioner that much, because mm-hmm. central air conditioners actually like to have some moisture on the coil because it assists the heat transfer, and that gets into a bunch of other stuff. But don't help. You're doing fine. Now, for a damp basement, you know, you don't want to run a big unit. There, a small dehumidifier can help out in that situation as long as there's a decent thermostat on it that, or humidistat that allows it to kind of come on and come off when you need it. Watch how often you use it. Those things use a lot of energy. And there's a lot of people that have them running all the time in their basement and don't realize what it's costing them.
We have another caller, and let me reintroduce our guest since we're here about maybe 18 minutes from the end of the program. Larry Lister is an engineer with Facility Dynamics Engineering. We're talking about home energy, taking your questions. We have one caller waiting patiently, and time for others if you'd like to join us. The number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll free anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455. We'll go next to an Urbana listener on line number 3. Good morning.
Hi, I just wanted to mention a book that I had discovered at a local bookstore that covers a lot of things that people call in about today and also when they call in to talk to Bill Rose and Hank Spees, and it's called Renovating Old Houses. It's by George Nash. It's a large format paperback, and it's $32, but it has a lot of information for people who have problems with their houses, no matter how old they are, including energy stuff, and with lots of good diagrams, and it even references Bill Rose on drainage issues. So we found it very helpful for dealing with some issues that we have with an old house my husband's family has in Ohio. So I just wanted to recommend that to folks who want to have diagrams and so forth and that cover what you're talking about and beyond.
Great.
Thanks a bunch. Bye.
Thank you.
Yeah. We can get that on the website maybe, huh?
Yeah, Renovating Old Houses. Was it George Nash? Is that the
author? I think that's
author?
What you said, yeah.
Oh, I'll look it up and maybe we can post that.
And actually, we might be able to post. There's some other really great websites out there nowadays for energy questions and answering energy questions that might save you from hitting Google and sifting your way through all
well,
the
that'd be good.
Perpetual motion machines that people are trying to sell you out there.
Let's make some more work for ourselves after the show then.
Right. Yeah, sorry, Jack.
I'll talk to the webmaster. Maybe we can make that happen.
Yeah,
no, I think it's a great idea.
Master.
I think that's a great idea.
Good.
So, well, our line's filled up. Let's
go
on.
Get my picture on the website.
Sure.
Woo.
Sure. Maybe we can have one when you had, you know, hair. No.
Yeah. Put my parrot hat on.
Okay. Well, let's go on and take some more calls. Next up, Urbana listener, line number 1. Good morning.
Hi.
Yes.
Enjoying the show. Really appreciate it.
Sure.
I've got a 40-year-old house, 40, 45-year-old, and it has a full basement, cement block walls, and it's unfinished. And I'd like to finish it in part because during the summer it turns into a great distilling unit. Water just sort of pours off the walls as it condenses. And I'm wondering if you have any suggestions about what I might consider to make sure it's as energy efficient as possible when I'm going through that process.
Whoa.
Of refinishing the basement, like covering the walls up.
You mentioned the word condense.
Yeah, humid summer air comes down into the basement, and because the walls are so cool, the water just condenses on the walls.
Yeah.
So I've got one of those.
I'd want to be sure that that's condensation and not...
That's what it is.
Not water. You're sure? Because
I'm quite sure of that.
I had a real similar one, and it wasn't condensation because I would check the temperature, and it wasn't it. But it could be. The issue, as long as you're, before you finish, as long as you're sure you're not getting, you know, hydrostatic water coming through there and
yeah, I'm,
you know,
I'm
all
pretty
that other stuff. Generally, the approach is, and you know, your choice of contract will be kind of critical. You want to insulate that surface and vapor protect it as well before you know as you build that out.
Yeah,
that's the short.
Are there any guidelines that you suggest how much insulation to put or?
You don't need much because the ground is actually your buddy. As far as insulating, it's going to be pretty efficient anyway. A lot of people wouldn't be doing it at all. So it really is, if you can figure out what this, the humidity thing is, you can calculate the, nobody's going to do this, of course, but you can calculate the dew point and find out you need enough insulation to protect, to keep you,
okay,
to keep the surface above the dew point.
Right.
And it won't take much. I mean, like an inch of blue board, my gut take is an inch of blue board or something is
right,
going to be completely enough.
Okay.
I don't think you need much at all. That's pretty interesting.
Okay.
Your walls are that cold, huh?
Yeah, they are. I've done a test, put a piece of foil on the wall, and it stays dry underneath it. So, And you can actually see it, like on the painted floor, the water actually beads up on the floor. The house doesn't have any central air and air conditioning, so
okay,
it can get pretty humid.
Yeah, so if it's beating up, then it is coming out. You are condensing out of the air,
right?
Have you done it? I mean, you might be the candidate for the dehumidifier,
I've got one of those down there, but it's running constantly.
I don't know.
And I'd like to be able to make more use of that space downstairs, so. I can go about finishing it and putting up a little bit of insulation to help control that. That would be great. So I just want to make sure I do it in an effective way.
Yeah, it sounds like you got a pretty soupy environment going in there, though, and you might look into the window unit issue for the upstairs, because that's gonna affect everything. Depending, unless you have some source of, you're pulling this humid air from somewhere into the basement directly. But, boy, I come on and start saying, oh, open your windows and don't use your air conditioner so much. But, sometimes there's good reason for having them when you need them.
And, right.
We don't need them right now.
Right.
But there are those times.
Yeah. It's not all the time like that, but when it happens, boy, does it happen.
And my temptation with people when they have these, they want to dehumidify, and they've got these dehumidification problems, is if their whole house has no conditioning during those humid times, I keep thinking, well, if you're going to run a window unit anyway and have it sitting in your basement, you might as well stick it in the window and get some cooling out of it,
right,
too, because you're paying for it.
Right, right.
So that's, I mean, that's, it's interesting. It's an interesting one.
Yeah, okay. Thanks.
You did diagnose the condensation thing correctly,
yeah,
though.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Just one other quick comment. I wonder if you might have some comments on this. Something I've read on the web about Passive House Institute. This is in Europe. People might want to visit their website. And I wonder if you're familiar with it, the sort of energy efficiencies they've been able to accomplish with some standards there. It's pretty stunning. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
I'm not terribly familiar with it. I do know of it, and I do know that generally in Europe they're really pushing the envelope in a lot of ways that we aren't yet doing, and there's some pretty neat things going on over there. You have to be a little willing to put up with some discomfort that we Americans aren't quite ready for yet.
Yeah, such as?
Humidity. Wider range in ambient temperatures, things that I'm not seeing our society go in that direction. As I started on my diatribe at 10 o'clock when we started this thing, and it's just like,
yeah,
you can't take a degree or two in either direction.
Right.
You might get outside more often and go do something.
Right. I hear you. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. Our lines are basically all full, and I want to include as many people as we can before we run out of time. We did have one question off the air that, because it's from a musician, I'm going to include because musicians get to cut the line. Quick question. Listener gone for 3 weeks in July. 10 or more guitars staying home in a two-story house with basement. No one staying home. Where to put the guitars, and do I run the AC for 3 weeks while gone? Humidity in July can be pretty bad.
I think you need to get those guitars into the hands of somebody that can use them during that 3 weeks. Now, wow. How sensitive are guitars, Jack?
They're pretty sensitive. Yeah, it depends. Acoustic especially. But yeah, I mean, you don't want, the thing that you don't want is rapid change of humidity or temperature.
It's like a piano.
Yeah.
Boy, I don't know. I mean, you could give them to somebody to hang on to for a while.
I might be able
to help.
Out.
Yeah. Yeah, Jack could help. Give them a little exercise. I don't know that I'd run my house for them. I mean, they're just guitars. Then it's not like they're pianos.
What? What?
All right. What kind of guitar? No. Yeah. I don't know that I'd condition the house necessarily for them. I don't know. Would you do that, Jack?
Well, I think that, again, stability is important.
All kidding aside, Jack owns a lot of really nice guitars, too.
Yeah.
So.
Hey, don't give up my address. The main thing is stability, as far as my experience, so that you don't want rapid changes, fluctuations in humidity and temperature. Maybe so, you know, keep things within a range.
Mm-hmm. And generally, too, at least with piano, I've got a big acoustic piano in the house. Generally, with that, is that low humidity is more the problem. And, you know, like Jack says, the changes are important first, but I don't see, you're not going to get those kind of rapid changes. Especially if you don't have air conditioning, because you do have it and it kicks in all of a sudden, and you know the humidity goes down. But summer I can't see it. Winter I'd be more worried about putting them somewhere where it's really cold and dry, and that's where wood really doesn't have fun.
Okay, well, hope that helps. We'll go on and talk with some more callers. Next up, someone in Effingham on line number 4. Good morning.
Yeah, thanks for the show. Mm-hmm. I've got a question on your feelings about corn stoves and argon gas in replacement windows.
Corn stoves.
Yeah.
They're like wood burning
stoves. Yeah. Burn corn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that a good way to go? Or
if you're going to burn something, I suppose you might as well burn that as opposed to wood. That's not bad.
Power plants are burning coal, so
yeah, right.
And don't they have like a feeder mechanism?
They got scrubbers, and you don't.
Yeah, it's got a feeder.
Yeah,
yeah. It depends on the. I think any time you've got an application where you'd have a wood stove, you'd be better off using those. I have no experience with how well they work or not. I heated a house solely by wood stove for 5 or 6 years, so I'm pretty familiar with what's involved in that. And I wish that some of this stuff had been available. It would have been pretty neat. I don't know how much the fuel costs. I really don't know much about it. But in the right application, you know. I'd say that's a way better way than, you know, going out and hacking down some trees that don't need to be hacked down. There's a lot of trees that do need to be hacked down. So,
yeah. What about the argon gas in windows, replacement windows?
The labeling on the windows is good. So go with the labeling. But generally, yeah, argon gas is a better efficiency. Option than pulling an evacuated area. So, they're fairly common. You let the labels direct you because the labels are consistent. If nothing else, it's a consistent yardstick.
Is it worth the extra money though? For the
I don't have a good handle on what the money difference is. Do you know what the difference is?
I'm not sure.
All right.
But what you're saying, Larry, is that go on the energy rating of the window label, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you can price it based on what the difference is.
Right. And the last time that I looked, it was minuscule difference to get a better efficiency, a higher efficiency window. And there was sort of a minimum standard, and then there was a nicely efficient standard, and then you could go into all the real exotic flavors of films and things like that, but at the general home stores there was sort of like the standard kind of junky one, and then there was the higher efficiency one, and you didn't pay much more for the higher efficiency one, and that's the sweet spot from as best I can tell.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for the call. A couple callers, we'll try to get them both in. Next up, someone in Villa Grove, line number 3. Good morning.
Yes, I have a question. I have an older home in Urbana. It has the original heating system, which I suspect is probably 75 years old. It's a water system, but I believe it's a gravity water system. There is no circulating pump, but because it's grossly inefficient, it's an old boiler covered with asbestos. I want to remove it from the house. And when I look at new boilers that they're gas-fired, they all have circulating pumps. And it seems to me that first of all, they also use much smaller volumes of water because it's being circulated rather than just being gravity fed, I guess, or powered. And my concern is that by getting a new boiler, introducing a circulating pump, you are completely changing the dynamics of that system. And my concern is that the heat won't distribute properly, that a gravity-fed system takes into account the length of pipe run, the diameter and such to distribute the heat, and if you then introduce a circulating pump that sort of is kind of going against the forces of nature, I may end up with the very spotty heating and that sort of thing. Can you change a system that dramatically just by introducing a circulating pump and putting in a smaller volume boiler and such into that old a system?
Without looking at the specifics of the system, yeah. Number one, a pump is going to just assist the natural thing anyway. So you're not going to be pumping against gravity.
Mm-hmm.
Depends on the. It really comes down to what you got on the radiator side, but you will gain such remarkable efficiency benefits from doing that, and probably will increase comfort benefits because when you throw horsepower at the problem, you start putting pumps and fans in. There's a little bit of a cost there. Circ pumps are like negligible.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably wasting more money on
electric
adapters plugged in your house.
Efficiencies would save me, but as I said, if a pump now is forcing water, you're saying it would just sort of augment the natural process. It wouldn't force water to go to a path of lesser resistance, which it might not have gone to in such volume based upon its temperature.
No, I think chances are, again, unless there's some weirdo thing that the heating contractor will look for, that you're actually gonna improve your you'll be more balanced and you'll have a lot more control over it.
We're gonna have to stop. We're out of time. But
wow.
Let's do this again sometime. Our guest, Larry Lister with Facility Dynamics Engineering. He stops by every once in a while to talk about home energy. And thanks so much for being here, Larry.
Thank you.
Focus 580 is made possible in part by a grant from the Art Mart in the Lincoln Square Mall, Urbana. The Art Mart is pleased to support public radio in East Central Illinois.
Support for today's broadcast comes from the City of Urbana, presenting the local farmers market at the square every Saturday morning starting at 7 a.m. with homegrown produce, fresh flowers and plants, baked goods and food, and original works of art. Located in the southeast lot of Lincoln Square Mall, downtown Urbana. Information is available at 384-2444.
That's it for this hour, Focus 580. When we return in about 10 minutes, we'll be talking about copyright, intellectual property, and technology with Siva Vaidyanathan and Kimber McLeod, both here. They're professors of communication studies at New York University and University of Iowa. We'll talk more in depth with them in just a few minutes. First, a break for some news and a market update.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety is